listen to two married lesbians discuss an LGBTQ plus book each month that highlights the queer human condition as they use connection and humor to relate the issues to us as a queer community. She's Anna.
And she's Miranda.
I am. And we're two married lesbians.
We are.
And we're all queer here. And we're back.
Indeed we are. All right, so Page Boy, this memoir is an adult book with reviews not suggesting an age range. So we advise caution if your teen reader wants to read it. Author Elliot Page is a transgender actor, producer, writer, and overall great human being. Since this is an adult book, I'm going to jump right in to the sexual adventures.
You're jumping deep.
There was a lot of dry humping mentioned, and I appreciate an authentic story.
Yeah.
But that was not my experience growing up.
Oh, man, it was mine. That purity culture, can't have sex.
I think my
but
purity...
But you want to get off.
Well, okay, I think my purity culture was so much that you didn't do anything. Like, too pure.
Too pure. I think here's the crux of it. People are sexual beings. Many are. Mm-hmm. Many are.
Yeah, there are.
Mm-hmm. Not to discount our asexual peeps out there. Right. But I think we do kids... And by kids, I mean, like, teenagers, middle school.
Right.
Still, I mean, I did sex ed in fifth grade.
Yeah.
But, like, we do them a disservice when all we teach is abstinence. Like, let's teach...
Because they're going to do things.
They're going to do things. And when left with no information, they may make
dry humping decisions.
Well, I think that's probably a safer version than other things that result in STIs, pregnancy before they're ready.
Right.
That sort of thing. So
also some of the
this feels like a weird place to start. I'm gonna be honest.
I know.
I can tell it was on your mind.
It was on my mind, and I just because you know I've been trying to read more nonfiction the last several years, and mm-hmm. I love a good memoir, and I felt that this one was just really, I mean, just really honest, and so I appreciated you know the sexual moments being honest, but there were several where he wasn't comfortable and like. The person they were paired up with wasn't picking up on that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of triggering for me and it bothered me and I just like,
I just wanted to... But I think that's important to talk about.
Yeah, it is important, but it's hard to read.
It is hard to read, but I think that's why it's so important to include stuff like that because, I mean, honestly, that's an experience a lot of people have. And I think that, I don't think we normalize talking about what all the spectrum of what rape can look like.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to hold more space for people to talk about sexual assault because I mean that's one of those things that I'm sure a lot of readers may have experienced.
And even when you talk, I remember like growing up talking to friends like who were doing things and like, well, did you go all the way? Like, it wasn't like, I did this, they did that. Like, it wasn't in detail, so you weren't always sure.
There just wasn't information.
You weren't sure it counted? You weren't sure what base you were at? I've never understood the bases.
It's
like, just,
so
you know,
bogus.
Yeah, so, too. I mean, what is first base with my wife? Is that hand-holding? Like, I don't know. I think it looks different for different people. Also, the identity of what counts as sex for queer people has always been kind of up for debate and your own personal... But when I was thinking about this book, because Elliot Page is really popular among, you know, the youngins with some of the stuff, you know, like the Umbrella Academy, some of the stuff they're in.
Yeah.
He's in. I just say they're in general, but.
But yeah, let's be intentional.
Yeah, let's be intentional. Some of the stuff he's in, I could see a teenager wanting to read this. And so like me, myself, and I as a parent thinking, okay, some of the sexual explanations of what was happening is kind of like I wouldn't want my teen to read that, but also like I think I would actually as I was reflecting on it because I'd rather them read something and be in a situation and be like, whoa, this is not okay.
This is like what I read
versus like not reading it at all and then having a moment and not knowing what to do.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like I don't want them to.
It's like you want to arm them with the information of going, hey, whether they're on one side or the other. Hey, this isn't okay. Or, hey, my partner doesn't seem to want to look at me.
oh, that's a bad sign.
We're not connecting, like, yeah. but they're still going and I'm, you know, hitting the red button. Like,
yeah.
So or stop. Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
And I think too, you know, there's also that moment of connection. If you're reading part of that, one of those experiences that he wrote about and you're like, that has happened to me. And like, that's hard too. Cause like, you don't want that to be something you connect with, but also like, it does kind of validate your experience.
It makes you feel less alone.
Absolutely. Because sexual experiences that don't satisfy, but like don't go well, they kind of leave you feeling, at least for me, like dirty and like confused mm-hmm. and like, was I not what I was supposed to be? You know, just like inadequate, you know? Yeah. And that's really hard. So I know we're diving in deep, but that was something I just kind of kept coming back to because it was throughout. And I just, you know, I just, I really felt for him.
Yeah, I did too. I'm going to say, like, even though I identify as a cisgendered woman, I mean, I say I'm like a gender nonconforming lesbian, but that's more about my exploration of...
Tools.
My tools. Stop it. But my exploration of, for me, what it means to be a woman. I've always... Well, not always. It's taken me a long time to figure a lot of stuff out. But for me... Oh, we got a snoring pug next to me. Hi, baby. For me, I've always felt like I'm a woman, but I have never felt especially feminine. And for me, I feel the most confident in who I am as a woman when I'm doing very masculine things, typically. Like, I feel really powerful and confident and, like just in my body. But I've never felt, you know, like I'm the wrong gender. I've generally felt that the world has a very narrow view of what a woman is.
You also had nothing to wear to the Barbie movie. Nothing in your closet.
Yeah.
So you had to go as Ken, which was fine.
Yeah, well, I am Knuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. but, like, even as a cisgendered person, this book resonated with me on a level that I don't think a book ever has. This book was like the first time, even though I'm not a trans man, like this book was like the first time that I felt a lot of the aspects of my identity were seen and valid and something I found in a book. It's really hard for me to find myself in a book. And...
Because you're such an odd being.
I am a very specific person. And that specific person that I am isn't commonly found in media.
I thought it was interesting when he goes to shop with his mom at Old Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically for girl clothes, mm-hmm. but all they can really do is, like, as they're walking around, he keeps looking at the boy clothes.
So that right there.
Yeah,
was
I
like,
thought of you. Yeah.
Yes, I was like, oh my gosh, I was like transported back to my frustrated mother, being like,
wear this, not that.
Yeah, or like, no, you can't wear those jeans. Like, you have to have these jeans. And I was always so frustrated because I was like, why? Why can't I wear the jeans that are for my body? Like, I've worn men's clothes. Well, technically, it would have been boys' clothes when I first started. But, like, I've worn men's clothes since middle school because the girls' clothes were wrong. And, like, I've never felt like a man. I've never identified as a man. I've never... felt like my gender is wrong. So like I do a very different experience from Elliot in that respect. But so much of those experiences that he describes, I was like, oh shit. I mean, yeah, it hit me hard. I think it's so powerful to wear the clothes that work on you. And I think it's so messed up that it is made so complicated for so many people. Because, yeah, they're just clothes, but they're really not. Like,
do you think you had an aversion, an aversion to women's clothing because of the lack of pockets?
I'm not gonna lie. The pockets are a very frustrating portion, but no, it's more about how it fits. But yeah, you should have pockets. I believe all women's clothes should have decent
real pockets, not those real fake pockets. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want that for everyone that wears women's clothes. But yeah, I think it goes
especially with me pockets. With like a phone and an insulin pump that I need a pocket for. Like, there, I need more pockets. I need more, not less.
Yes, I'm there for you, babe. You need more pockets. Some of the other parts that were really resonated with me was, like, even from jump with Elliot's author's note, where he mentions that he actively chooses to dead name himself to better tell his story, but that isn't mm-hmm. an excuse for others to dead name him. And I thought that was a really important point to bring up, because I know sometimes when
folks it's an important distinction.
An important distinction. Because sometimes folks outside of the community feel like, oh, if somebody
or
says
Florida.
This, now I have, or Florida, yeah. But now I have permission to do it. And it's like, no. This is someone's story that they're telling, and they're doing this for narrative reasons. This isn't like an open invitation to dead name people. So I thought that was a really important distinction that he made. I really enjoyed the way that the story was told, because, like, at first I was like, I don't understand why this isn't chronologically laid out.
Yeah, that I had an issue with that, because I was like, we kind of kept jumping back and I was trying to keep track of the dates and...
But here's the deal. That part doesn't matter. And that's why I like that it wasn't chronological. His story is not made more impactful by being chronologically laid out, so you know exactly when he did this and that and that. That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Those are details for him. He's got it.
That's just
He's
my type A personality of wanting it A, B, C, D, E.
But the way that he wove it all together, it's about kind of moving through and exploring emotions and concepts and digging through shame and finding himself and working through that. So, like, the way that he just kind of had a through line that made sense as you got through it, there were a couple times I would be like, wait a minute, so this was this time?
Yeah, sometimes I was like, how old is he now? Because I was, you know, again, with this sexual experience, how old is he now?
But then I was like, you know what, Miranda? You're wasting a bunch of time trying to figure out
it worked. Overall, it worked.
Yeah, just go with the flow and hear this story as it's kind of being unfurled for you. Also, speaking of hearing the story, I am jealous. I read the physical book, and then you were like, I'm going to do the audiobook. So you got to hear Elliot just, like, read the story to you.
Well, I didn't. I just wanted to see if the library had it, and they did. And I thought, well, you were still reading the hard copy, and I was tired of waiting. Slow reader over there.
I read this one pretty fast.
Yeah, okay, fair. And I was like, well, let's see who reads it, because, you know, the narrator can make or break it.
Oh, boy.
And it was, like, read by the author. I was, like, sold, because I thought he was attractive before. I think he's attractive now. The voice was doing it for me.
Yeah.
And it almost made me feel like I was just sitting down to dinner with an old friend and listening mm-hmm. to their life story. So I just, it felt like a very non-sexual, intimate experience. So I just really appreciated him doing that, because, you know, I mean, he's really busy with everything he does. So
yeah,
it is hard to kind of nail down time to do that. But yeah, so I recommend doing both. Or if this is probably a book I'll reread. I might, like I said, the audio is just fantastic.
If I reread it, I'm gonna go for the audiobook version.
Again, I wouldn't listen to it with kids in the car.
No,
because of the dry humping.
Well, I think in some other sexual experiences that might not be an appropriate level.
Right. I'm just saying.
So when Elliot was talking about the way that he would play when he was a kid,
mm-hmm.
I related to that so heavily because he was talking about the, you know, the way that he would kind of have this imaginative play and then the way that he would relate to other kids. And there was so much about his childhood that really mirrored my own. Because, I mean, even though I have sisters, like, I was an only child for 9 years. So there was a lot of that growing up and being alone and then all of a sudden having siblings. So, like, when he was growing up, was alone for a long section of time, and then his dad remarried.
And to a horrible human.
She sounds like a... Oh, boy. I mean, some of the stuff that Elliot describes, like, whether it was at the hands of his stepbrother or the stuff that his stepmother said, I mean... Like, kids shouldn't have to go through that.
It's like he was being bullied by his new stepmother. Family.
Yeah. Well, the whole family.
The whole family, yeah.
And then, like, for then his father to just be like, oh, no, that's not happening.
Or I tried in private to, you know, put the kibosh on that. And it's like,
your kid needs to see you try.
Yeah, they need to see that conversation. Not every conversation.
Right,
but
they need to see that you're making attempts. Or you specifically go to them and say, listen, this wasn't... Label the behavior. This behavior wasn't okay.
Doesn't and here's what I told them in response. Like, here's what I did to defend you.
Yeah.
Kids need that.
But as it was, Elliot felt alone in his family. He felt alone. And, I mean, his, you know, obviously his mother was a huge part of his life and was this amazing force of love and empathy and protection. But because that journey of exploring his sexuality and exploring his gender and that, you know, that shift in what felt right to him versus as he was aging, the societal expectation of what he should look like and wear and do, that was something his mother didn't hold space for.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was really hard to read, especially when you knew what he was going through over at his dad's place. I also, one of the things that I thought was really cool about the way Elliot wrote his memoir was that he would weave in bits of history about where he lived. So, like, you heard about the native people that lived there before the white settlers. White colonizers, let's be honest. And you would know, like, the history of different events that happened in specific areas and how those kind of linked to maybe socioeconomic, you know, disparate populations around there. And I really loved it because, A, I think history is cool, even when it's really dark and terrible, because it helps us connect the dots. It helps us understand why we have systemic racism. It helps us understand where it came from. And then, I mean, just like anything in life, the more you understand and know about, like, the totality of the human experience, not just the story you get told in school, because let's face it, that's primarily what a lot of the history in school is. It's a story told by the victors
in
favor of the victors, and then the identities and the experiences and everything of marginalized groups are completely erased. And I love that he kind of wove that in there, because I think a lot of times there is this huge challenge in understanding, and first of all, even finding out about a lot of this history. You have to seek it out. It's not just there for you in school. But then taking what you learn and what you know and rectifying that with, you know, the real experiences of the people then with the real experiences of not only yourself, but your community now. So I really appreciated the way that kind of got tied throughout, you know, based on where he was living and different things like that. I just thought it was really cool. And it gave a lot of context, even if you had never been to one of the places he's talking about. I also thought when Elliot was talking about right when Juno was coming out, there were all these like articles and papers that before he had come out as trans, obviously, that they were hypothesizing, you know, is he queer? Obviously they were using different pronouns then because he hadn't come out yet. But all these things, and it really reminded me of the recent frustrating tragedy. It probably felt like tragedy to him, but of the actor that played Nick Nelson in Heartbreaker.
Heartstopper.
Heartstopper.
It breaks my heart.
Oh my gosh, I need more coffee.
Yes, Heartstopper.
Literally have a Heartstopper sticker on my microphone case here.
Yeah, because they, you know, people question queer characters, actors who play queer characters, if they're queer, and I don't think you have to be queer to play a queer character. I think it's nice, you know, there's lots of straights out there that are playing straight characters, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's great to let them bring an authentic piece to the role, but to...
Like queer characters queer characters.
Yeah, like that authentic piece of, like, mm-hmm. knowing a little bit more of what it feels like to be in that skin. But to harass people into forcing themselves to come out is just...
It's horrendous. Wrong.
It's horrendous.
It's...
Yeah. He does a great job. He's amazing. You're not going to get with him. Who cares? Like, let him go.
Yeah, leave him alone. Mm-hmm. Leave him alone. Like, I don't understand that.
And also, like...
portion of the press.
He's young. He's, like, under 20, like, 18, 19?
I can't remember.
Something like that. So, like, maybe he hasn't figured it out yet.
A lot of people, it takes time.
Yeah, you're not just
born... Or maybe he's not in a safe space.
Yeah, you're not just born into this world knowing who you are and what you are and every part of your life. I mean, every part of your identity is just known to you from birth. That's not how it works.
Mm-mm. So it's a process. It's a journey.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I also like... So we were talking about Elliot and his relationship with his mother previously. Mm-hmm. And at one point she says, "I just want what's best for you. I don't want you to have a hard life." And I know you and I have talked about this before, but like my mom literally said something very similar to me when I was like in middle school or high school, somewhere in there, that was a big aspect of me not questioning my sexuality and whether or not I was straight. And I just was like, that one really hit me because I was like, yeah, like sometimes these really, to the parent, what seems like an innocuous comment like that can have such an extreme impact on you as a kid and trying to figure out like what any or all of this means.
And it kind of forces conformity. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want things to be difficult, so...
Just look and act like everybody else.
Yeah, like, or all the other girls at your school or in high school or your choir class or whatever. And it's just like, I think at a certain point you just get tired from all the, like, disingenuous moments.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Living and being how other people want you to live and be.
When that's not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there are probably some straight people out there that can even identify with that sentiment. Like, conforming to the way, quote-unquote, everybody's supposed to act.
Or people in poly relationships.
Yeah. Like, it's...
You're supposed to only have one partner. Says who?
Yeah, it's...
Well, the government, but okay. What's the difference?
The government needs to calm down sometimes.
Calm down, yeah. Taylor Swift, calm down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's a really, you know, a big thing when we look at just... Not even gender things, but like when we look at, you know, you have to have a house and a job and a car and a career by 30. And it's like, sometimes life throws curveballs at you, or mm-hmm. health problems, or mm-hmm. family dynamic issues, or a move, or relocation of another sort, and it's just impossible to really hold yourself up to a certain standard of, you know, what kind of seems like an arbitrary number of success, of like, by 35 I'll do this, or what your 5-year plan is, or what your 10-year plan is. Like, a plan doesn't have to be followed. It's not a roadmap to, mm-hmm. you know, you're not literally driving from here to California to arrive in California. So when people look at their future plan, you know, you're probably not going to end up exactly where you saw yourself with every stop along the way, because that's not how life works.
No. Well, and it'd be boring, honestly, if that's how life worked.
And we'll be right back. And we're back.
Throughout the book a little bit, Elliot was talking about, like, playing walkie-talkies with his mom.
Oh, yeah, that was cute.
It was very cute. And then I loved the kind of metaphor that he turned it into, where he was talking about how the static got in the way as he aged. And I was like, oof, that hit me.
It was deep.
Because, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about how we have some complicated relationships with our mothers, and I know for me it very much feels like that there's been all this static in the way. Like, I remember all these times I had with my mom when I was younger that were just like awesome and beautiful, and then now it's very fraught, and you know, I just sometimes think about, like, is there a way back? What's the way back? Is there a way to just kind of rinse it clean and...
Well, I don't know about that, because, you know, I really liked your parents when I first met them. I guess because...
Because you thought my dad's name was Roger.
I did. Yeah, not Randy. But I also just thought they come across as very big-hearted. Mm-hmm. Somewhat open-minded, which I learned later that's not true, but just sweet country folk. And, you know, as the years have gone on, like, I've kind of distanced myself of, like, what I tell them about myself and what, like, we share about our lives. And so, you know, just so we're in August right now, so back to June and Father's Day, and we wanted to take your dad to this nice, like, store, woodworking store or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you're walking around with him and talking to him about stuff, because I don't know what any of that stuff is. So I, by default, you know, am with your mom. And she's walking around telling me how she knew you were gay before you got married to your ex-husband, da-da-da-da. And, but we were supportive when she came out, and everybody finds their own way. And I was like, what the F? Like, I just was...
Maybe she's doing some revisionist history.
Yeah, but I was just like, what? Like... Why are you telling me this now? Like, I was exhausted and needed more coffee at that time. And it was a Sunday and during the summer. And I was like, at one point I just wanted to, like, stop and yell at her and be like, if you didn't think she was in love with her ex-husband before she got married, whether she was gay or not, like, take that out of the equation, why wouldn't you be like, hey, I don't think y'all are meant to be, you know? Like, because I remember telling you that story, I think later that day, because my demeanor totally changed. I was like, you know, we walked up and joined y'all. Your dad was trying to figure out if he wanted to buy something or buy it on Amazon or whatever. And I was like, you know, I gave you the look, like, make the decision. I'm about to kill your mother. Let's leave. I didn't kill your mother.
I'm glad you didn't. Yeah, I made a good choice. I don't want you to go to jail.
Yeah, I would slay it's in not, jail, though. It,
but
I know,
it's not
I know.
Like oranges.
I know, I know. But anyway, so we got in the car, and I... just kind of processed it for a little bit. And then I was like, I got to tell you what your mom was going on about. And you were like, what the? I was like, I know. I don't even remember your response. I'm just so still upset about it. And just like, I know sometimes parents or family members in general, even friends, don't want to, like, ruin the perfect moment for you of, like, whether it's you're in a really happy relationship, but you think maybe one's cheating, or you think,
yeah,
you know, they're just not a good fit for, you just get a weird vibe or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're like, something's off about this. But especially when you're going to get married, like, that's the time to say something.
Yeah, that's a pretty serious decision. There are legal ramifications.
That was a 10-year-long decision.
Yeah. I mean, We got the kid out of it.
Yeah, so I know.
He's
but
pretty
like,
great.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, her saying that now and, like, telling me this years into our marriage.
It's a weird.
On a holiday
it's
was
a
odd.
Weird thing to say.
Like, I don't know what headspace she was in. I was just like.
I think that statement was more about her feeling
guilty.
Guilty.
Yeah.
And instead of holding on to that guilt or talking about it with an appropriate party, like a therapist.
Or with you or with and me, a therapist.
Or with
God,
her
I
want to
see that.
Oh, that'll never happen.
You and a therapist and her. I mean, I want him videotaped and I want to watch the videotape.
She has been putting me in therapy since I was, I don't know how young, like so young. I have been
like
in
less
therapy.
Than 10, younger than
yes,
10?
Yes, okay. Younger than 10. And I have never once known her to ever go to therapy. She would show up to all my doctor's appointments, everything. She'd never once been in therapy with me. Not
I mean,
once.
There's things that she says, like, even as, like, an offhanded comment that I'm like, that's a lot to unpack with a professional. Like, you know, you just need, like, I'm going to write that down for later.
Yeah.
But I remember that conversation mainly because it was, you know, recent. But just, like, we're walking around a store and...
This feels like the appropriate thing to say?
Yeah. Like, and also just, like, the natural response from me, which I just held my tongue. I don't know how. So kudos to me. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure your face was amazing at that moment.
Well, we were looking around at stuff, so she didn't always make eye contact, thankfully. But, like, then why didn't you say something?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know that you're happy with X, Y, and Z. I don't think you're happy with him. Are you happy? And maybe if she'd had that conversation and you still chose that path, then that's on you, you know? But she mm-hmm. should have tried. I don't know. I was just... very taken aback by that and was like, I need to get out of this situation as quickly as possible.
I'm so sorry that happened.
You don't have to apologize on behalf of her craziness. I just...
Well, it's like my therapist says, you either choose to distance yourself from her or you know and accept that she's going to act that way. She's going to say problematic things.
And I do distance sometimes, like when you're going to meet up for dinner and I've had a long day and I'm like, I can't. Or even if I haven't had a long day, I've had a great day. And I'm like, I can't. I can't today. Because you don't want to hurt, or I don't. I don't want to hurt the relationship by just blurting something out. Because
oh,
I've
like
been,
she does?
Because, well, mine would be in anger because I've held it in so long.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's one of those things, like the problematic people in my life, I've finally gotten to the point, and I'm not perfect about it, I'm human, but that I'm like, they get to run around and upset people and hurt them. Why am I always holding space for them to feel safe? That's not okay.
When I myself don't feel safe.
Yeah, like I can speak up and say things.
Like their comfort is like... Of a priority, there's priority, and like my identity at times is just offensive to them. My existence mm-hmm. is offensive to them. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
Well, and one of the best things that I've learned to do is to ask them to repeat it,
because, so they can hear it in their head.
Yeah,
as they say it.
And if they know it's problematic, they don't want to repeat it, and. I don't know. I found that to be one of the easiest ways to kind of push back against some of that stuff. I don't know. Maybe our listeners have some other ways that work well for them.
Nobody else has a problematic family member.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No
yeah,
one else.
Just us.
That's not a normal thing in queer communities.
No, that's not a trope at all. Nope.
There was at one point, to get back to the book, there was at one point that Elliot was talking about going to a party and that there was this really famous actor
was
drunk and like super homophobic
and
awful.
Spewing vitriol at the people, but mainly at him.
Yeah. At him, about him.
Around other people.
Around other people. And Elliot said that, like, you know.
Still a very known person.
I really hope that actor that Elliot was talking about did some soul searching, worked on himself. Because I think Elliot gave him too much grace in, like, not naming him. I mean, I get it. It's a small It's a small world.
But didn't it make you wonder?
Oh, it did. I looked up IMDb.
Oh, shut
and
up.
Was trying to,
but
like...
they didn't say, or he didn't say that they were in a movie together. They were just at the party together.
Well, but I thought he had said that he worked with him at some point.
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember.
What I was thinking was, you know, how long ago was that? Again, we had to kind of go back to the timeline. And then it was right after he'd come out. So that was 2014. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, from then to now, that's 9 years, who was popular back then and is still, I mean, because 9 years is a long time to stay in the media's eye. And there's only a couple people I came up with. I was like, man, I like them as a person.
Well, here's the deal.
I wish I knew. Like, I know that's terrible. I'm sure there's articles that speculate on it.
Well, but here's the deal. So,
but what? does knowing help us?
I don't know.
I mean, we're not. Are we going to boycott that actor's movies? Are we going to blow up his Twitter?
I'm sorry. Well.
Or his ex? I don't
know.
I'm so confused by that.
I insist on calling it Twitter. I'm going to dead name the company, just like Elon dead names his daughter. I'm over it. I'm not about his
tolerance. I also think Twitter, like, it's like Facebook. You just keep the name.
Yeah, that seems like a really... ridiculous move on multiple fronts.
Well, if you're going to rebrand and rename, it needs to be more than one letter.
Mm. Okay. Well, also, you should have the legal avenue of owning the rights to that.
I agree.
In relation to social media, which he doesn't. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out.
His legal team must not get a lot of sleep.
Well, I think he fired most of them as part of the problem.
So they sleep well now.
Yeah, they sleep well now.
Well, that's just my point. Like when I was thinking about, you know, who he was talking about. I just, you know, I guess on a certain level, like, yeah, we're just curious beings. We want to know. But at the same time, maybe that person needs his privacy to really reflect and to think about things.
Yeah.
Because sometimes...
And I hope so.
Sometimes what we truly think comes out when we're drunk.
Yeah, but that...
In an unkind way. No, I know. It's still problematic. I'm just saying. But, like, if you truly feel that way, like, you know, all the super homophobic people... you're probably gay yourself. Like, and that's the irony there, right? It's just intense self-hatred. Mm-hmm. So one of these days, you're going to come out and you're going to find the love of your life and you're going to parade around and be awesome, or you're going to go and look quietly.
I don't know that some of those people...
I think DeSantis will find his lover. I think he will.
Oh, boy. I don't want to think about that man having happiness. I hope, against hope, that people like that have some sort of moment where they self-reflect and realize that they have been terrible, horrific humans, and choose to do something better in their life.
Or they like barefoot step in cow dung. I don't know.
That would be nice. Mm-hmm. But no, I honestly, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Like, they're getting too much money and power and...
Well, then may they forever tip their call boys well.
Oh, my gosh. Anna.
What? You know they have them.
Probably.
You've heard that about our former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, that he's a...
You had told me.
I have told you that. Yeah. There's a book about it and everything that they guy interviewed all his, like, supposed, you know, escorts or whatever the appropriate word these days is. And they all have, like, specific stories that were, like, the details were, like, things that, like, you wouldn't, like, that you would know only if you'd had sex with someone.
Mm.
Like, the specific things done, said, whatever. I was like, oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's a podcast that I listen to that, the Bechdel cast, I'm a fan, where they talk about movies and, you know, how they treat women and intersectional identities. But anyway, one of the things they talk about when they have an actor that they enjoy, but they're like, wait a minute, is he still good? Has he been canceled? So as of this recording, we don't know anything. So
that's true. It's true that it's not been revealed.
So this
book is pretty new. It came out.
Yeah, I know ago. Sometimes... that stuff ends up being public eventually. Sometimes it doesn't. But I deeply believe that you as a human, A, deserve respect, even if you don't like somebody, like common human decency is a thing. And I do think that each of us has the right, because capitalism, which is all we do here in America, it seems like, because you have the right to say that you vote with your dollar. You can say, I am going to boycott the things that this person releases because I don't want them to get my money. Just like I know in our house here, we have a deeply problematic, fraught relationship with the Harry Potter universe because J.K. Rowling's a giant TERF. For me, I know that I read the books growing up and watched the movies growing up and everything before I even knew anything about all that. And so there's like this nostalgic aspect. There's a lot of queer folks that have found a lot of belonging in the characters and the experiences in those stories. But also at the same time, once I knew that J.K. Rowling was a giant TERF and that she has openly said that her financial success is a direct reflection that all of her fans agree with her in those beliefs that trans folks are somehow less than and not worthy of our respect and love and support, that I was like, okay, that's a hard line for me. I'm no longer going to do anything that's going to contribute money to her. I can't really it's hard to rectify like that childhood relationship with a piece of media.
Well, also with the big themes of Harry Potter being love and acceptance and mm-hmm. justice and mm-hmm. good triumphing over evil, like, mm-hmm. hello. There's a disconnect for me. Like, I almost just wondered when it first started, like, it was almost like when somebody gets accused of a crime that you're like, they couldn't have done that. They're the favorite. But it's like, I couldn't believe what she was saying was actually her words until I actually, like, heard it on video. Because I was like, she's written the most inclusive characters.
I know. Well, when you start dissecting it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But, overall, like, the overall themes of Harry Potter.
The themes are very inclusive.
Right, but the characters lack certain...
Well, like, right. I mean, there are overtly racist... characterizations of right. people.
But this did also start, her book started in the 90s when
yeah.
you had your black media and you had your white media and you had your Hispanic media and everything was separate. And then you had the aughts where stuff, oh my gosh, we started to mix and generate.
There's one person of color in the background.
Yeah, and then there's one person of color in their friend group and then there's more. Yeah. And then, so I think, you know, when you even see that with Hunger Games, and her books came out a long time ago, there were no queer characters, very few people of color.
The people of color were specifically, this one.
Yes, exactly. But then her new one, which was the prequel, which happens like 75 years beforehand, she's got a long-term gay couple. I'm like, you can't go back and rewrite that crap. You can't fix that.
But I will say, but also, if you are learning and growing, when you know better, you do better. So here's the thing that this brings up an issue that I feel very strongly about. In our queer community, yes, all of us can choose who we support, who we don't. I agree. That is important. Because at the end of the day, when we live in a capitalist society, that's what you got. Vote with your dollar. But also, in addition to that, I think sometimes our queer community tends to be very hesitant to let people become allies. But how else can people do that if they aren't allowed to learn that what they have been doing isn't good enough?
I just felt pandered to when I read the
valid.
And I love Susan that's Collins. Valid. I just was like I said, it was a very subtle... his husband or whatever, and I was like, okay, but there were no queer people 75 years later in the original Hunger Games. I just was like, I felt as a reader. I wasn't reviewing the book. I was just reading it as a reader. as a fan and was, you know, I was upset about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I get that. I just think if we as a community are like, oh, well, you weren't here before, but now that person is like, wow, I learned I'm problematic in my views of queer people, my views of race in America, my views of whatever. You, if we immediately say this person wasn't an ally, therefore they'll never be an ally, I think that's dangerous.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I am hesitant to believe when I'm reading a prequel that was written years later and it takes place 75 years before the events of the first books, that you very quietly included a gay character. Like, I'm hesitant to believe you are an ally because there was no proof of any queerness nor real racial diversity in your first set of books.
And that's
now
valid.
I still read the books. I enjoyed the writing, but you can, you know.
So she has more work to do, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, but then I also, like, there was a long time author I read when I was a teenager, and I I read her books as they come out. And she had this, and I was writing a review for it, and I was honest about it, because there was, like, this baby storyline where one of her friends, you know, was at summer camp and was kind of avoiding her, and she came out to her over the phone, and I was like, this just felt like she had to have queerness, because she's never, in all of her, like, 10-plus books, had any queerness. And I was like, she's dying out. Like, yeah. That's what I wanted to say. She's a dying author, because people don't want to read books, I mean, I don't, about white girls before college figuring out their white girl identities after their parents' divorce with all the white people in their lives. I'm just
Sounds homogenous.
I'm over that. And like that, but that was popular when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And as a white girl, identifying girl in high school, that's what the librarian handed me. And I read them and somewhat enjoyed them and got on with my life. But now, as an adult, queer human, I don't identify with those books anymore. And I didn't appreciate being pandered
to. Well, even though you're still white.
Yeah, still white, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
But I don't, you know, I don't identify, I didn't appreciate that was just kind of a cast off too.
So it sounds like to me, a couple things. Mm-hmm. One, you grew as a human and welcomed and wanted more diverse perspectives in your media.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it seems like to me she's attempting, this author, you said female, right?
Yeah.
This author is attempting to have more diversity in her writing. So then the question becomes, how can people that are allies satisfy what you want as a queer person while they're growing?
I don't think she's an ally, like, to never include before.
But
I'm just okay.
No one can change the past.
I didn't get some queer friends. Like, if that's your first entry to queerness, and that's, I just was offended, like I said.
Do we know if she has queer friends?
I don't know. Maybe.
But that's the point. I mean, that's what I'm bringing up. Is like,
I mean, just look at your circle. Like, I
think that's great feedback, like, for everybody.
Look at your circle. And, like, I have a long-term book club that I was historically, you know, middle-aged women and now several retirees. So I was always the youngest one. I've been in it since before we were married.
Mm-hmm.
And the original organizer ended up leaving. She had some personal issues and, you know, just needed to distance her resources. It's a lot to organize a meeting and a book every month.
Yeah.
And we always did two books because we couldn't decide. So we had an extra credit book and da, da, da. So, but like, I have increasingly been frustrated when I go to this book club because we keep reading books by white authors about white people. And I have continued to suggest books by people of color and, it's not like a book that just came out, so they don't want to go buy it. But also, why not support the person of color? Like, it's not like we never buy books. But they're all pulling out their phones, and they're like, well, can we get it at the library? And I'm like, well, let's just buy it. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but, like, I'm not going to get, and I love, you know, I love a library, but but I'm not always going to get all my books at a library. There are books that I want to read now, and I want to get it now. And I just, was frustrated, and so I missed the last one because I didn't feel well. And then they posted the next meetup for September. And I was like, oh, what are the books? Because sometimes they read books that I'm like, I read that a year ago, because I read things sometimes, shock, as they come out. Mm. And it was two books by white people. One was about, like, hot flashes and growing old. And so, like, that's definitely out of my age range. But I still might read it for the perspective.
Yeah.
But it's from a white person's perspective. And I'm just like, I'm done with this. Like, I think I'm done with it. Because I'm tired of seeing people of what was a book club just for women, but the women of color that would come and that they never come back.
Yeah.
And it's probably because they didn't feel comfortable. I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but I just know, like, as I feel like I am an anti-racist ally, I'm uncomfortable myself, so I can't imagine being a person of color in those meetings. And then as the one queer person, that would be like, oh, what if we read this? This person's queer. And they're just like, meh. Like,
It still boggles my mind the one time I joined one of the meetings for that book club.
Oh, when we were, during COVID, we did virtual.
Yeah, I joined it, and I don't understand how I convinced them that Lovecraft Country was going to be a book to pick. Not by a black author, but it's basically an almost entirely black cast.
They all hated it.
You know, that makes me sad.
I disliked it just because of the pace of the book, but that's a whole other thing, not just because of what the book was about.
I just don't understand how they agreed to it if you can't get them to.
Well, because they go and they look online and, like, they're looking up reviews, and so you can't solely go. I don't go and look up a review look at the stars and figure out whether or not I want to read the book.
Well, you have to look at the genre. Yeah. You have to look at the.
Yeah, if it's an author I know, like, there's books. Like, I was talking about someone the other day, I was like, oh, well, I would read anything written by her. But this is her new one. And I was talking to a student, and, like, there are authors that I'll read whatever they write, whether it's a menu or if it's an obituary, anything. Mm-hmm. But
menu or obituary.
I'm telling you, there are authors, you know, I would do that. But for an unknown author or a book that I'm not sure of, like, I'm going to read the synopsis mm-hmm. to see if I'm interested before I agree to read it for a book club. Because mm-hmm. then you've got to come with some thoughts and some questions mm-hmm. to have a discussion. We, a long time ago, broke away from the stereotypical, let's just sit around and drink wine. We always did that while eating, so the wine had something to soak into.
Oh.
So we could drive home
later.
You're
right. That mm-hmm. is different.
That's very different. Uh-huh. Very different than the stereotypical wine book clubs. So I'm just like, you know, I'm just kind of over that. You know, I'm at a point in my life where I think I've outgrown them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I was reading this book, I had this recovered memory that I honestly I hadn't thought about in decades.
Oh, this ought to be good.
So I, when I was a kid, loved the Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was my jam. Still is, still obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember.
Oh yeah, you drugged me to the movie the first week I was back at work.
Good.
I was so tired. Yeah. You had to see it opening night.
I did, and I appreciate
I'll go
that
alone. I was like, I'll go with you, I guess.
I did give you an out. I said you could not go if you don't want to.
I made you buy me popcorn. It's fine.
I did. Yeah. But when I was a kid, I was playing with my friend Rob, and I thought Rob was the coolest. Like, when I was a kid, any friend I chose to be friends with was a boy. I was only friends with girls who I was made to be friends with because, like, our moms were friends or whatever. But anyway, Rob was so cool, and he got that I was a Ninja Turtle. Like, he understood it. He's like, yeah, you could be a Ninja Turtle. It's great. So we're playing. And then some other kid that was, like, a friend of his or whatever was over. And he was like, she cannot be a Ninja Turtle because she's a girl. She has to be April. And I was furious. I was like, "What? Rob knows I am a Ninja Turtle. I am Donatello.
Mm.
Why does this kid not get it? It's not like I was his favorite Ninja Turtle either. Like, he was like Raphael or something. I wasn't taking his turtle.
I wasn't taking his turtle.
And I was just.
That is a euphemism if I've ever heard one. I'm not sure what for, but I'm going to figure it out.
Okay. I wasn't taking his turtle. But, like, I couldn't wrap my mind around why this kid didn't get it. And so it's like Elliot, when he was talking about all these different things where he's like, I don't understand why somebody's not getting that this is the wrong clothing or this is the wrong role.
For the Juno premiere?
Well, just like that was an overarching thing throughout the book. So I don't know. I just, it reminded me of that. And I was like, I get it. I get it, fam. I get it. And then when Elliot has this one night stand with this woman that's like, looks like she's like out of her mind, like, wow, like ramped up. Mm-hmm. I love the quote where Elliot was like, I always forget about cocaine. Because I guess she was coked out of her mind.
Yeah, that was priceless. That was a laugh out loud moment.
I was like, poof. Well, you know, one night stands are sometimes a one night stand for a reason. You know, because you're like, oh, not that. Yeah, not that.
Thanks for that. Or not even thanks, but like, glad to be done with this.
Bye. Bye. Yeah. So the one thing I wanted to mention, when you talk about like gender presentation or you talk about your gender identity, stuff like that. So like, I remember years ago, not in the job I have now, but a job before that, where it was like a mom and pop shop and like the guy that owned it would pop in pretty frequently. His wife was like, she looked like this beautiful blonde, you know, Western beauty standards, like lady, and was very put together and all this. So I had, because I was managing a video game store at the time, and I had, you know, all these plans laid out to like get us more business and attract larger audience, yada yada. So part of that was going to these specific like flea market events to recapture some folks. Well, anyway, so we go to this one, and he's like, oh, by the way, my wife's going with you. And I was like, oh, to help? And he's like, no, she has a basket business. And so she's going to be there with her baskets. And I'm like, okay. So it starts raining and we're outside. All we have is like a little tent, but all of a sudden it had been raining the night before. It starts raining again. There's mud everywhere. I'm trying to move stuff and do everything by myself. She's sitting on a stool. And then at one point I literally fell in the mud. I'm covered. I'm wet. I'm covered in mud. But I mean, I felt really good about the day because we got a lot done, right? So it's the end of the day, covered in mud. I am a literal mud monster. And I look over at her. The sun is now out and shining. And she looks like this beautiful goddess, right? Just perfect and beautiful. And I am a mud monster. And I would just like, I remember that moment and being, because it was before I was out, but being very struck by the fact that like, the way that I am a woman is not the same as the way that you are a woman. And I just like, it was just such a weird moment. Do you ever have moments like that?
All the time.
Yeah?
Especially in education, because it's such a female-dominated area.
Yeah.
That you're either like, you know, like the fashionista teacher, you know, you look really cute every day, or you're like the no-makeup gym teacher, and I kind of fall somewhere between there because I don't wear makeup, and I don't, you know, I wear more comfortable clothing and sometimes male clothing, and it's like, I don't really fit, you know, I don't talk about my husband because I have a wife. So
these are facts.
Yeah. So I don't get my nails done every week, and because I think that's a waste of money. So sorry if you own that business, but I just think that's, you know, fake. You know, like I don't dye my hair, I don't put fake nails on, I don't.
It just doesn't speak to you.
It doesn't speak to me, and I think that's all about like, you know, the marketing toward women and how we need to change. We need to dye our roots. We need to change our nails. Why?
Yeah.
These are how my nails look. I mean, they're not going to be ratchet. I'm going to trim them and keep them up the cuticles, but I'm not going to paint them colors just because I'm supposed to because I'm a woman.
Yeah. I don't know. I just...
I did want to say there was a part at the end where he writes about you don't have to feel this way anymore, about like not... like being who you are and having mm-hmm. that like internal struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just deciding to love yourself. And that was kind of this, like, at least for me, it kind of felt like this, like, message to the queer community of, like, you know, you doubt yourself or you're not sure what the term is of your identity. Because it's not just LGBT.
Yeah.
Like, it's so many more letters and it's so many more, you know, there's aromantic, there's this, there's that. Like, there's a lot of terms that are not... As well known or even normalized within the queer community of what people understand them to be. So I just kind of took that as this, like, love letter to, you know, the queer community is, you know, you might not know the label that you are, but you just, you know that you're queer and, you know that you need to stay here and be here with us. And even in the, these... well, the state of emergency that HRC has called for, you know, over the summer. So it's getting harder, I think, for people. You know, we have all these pride events in the summer, but I think it's hard for people to be proud in certain moments and certain places in their lives because they hear the backlash or they hear this or, you know, I've had teachers look me in the eye and call a trans kid it to my face.
That's so disgusting.
And it's like, how do you calmly respond? So I always say, no, that's not okay. We call them by the pronoun that they want to be called. But then there's also that, you know, strong encouragement to have the conversation with the student so that you don't out them to their parents.
Yeah.
And there's teachers that don't care.
Yeah.
And will voluntarily and willfully out students to their parents. And if that student has come out to you, you know, it's not a huge secret, you know, to keep. It's just they're not ready to tell their parents. It's not harming them. They're not going to harm themselves. You know, if that comes out because maybe they might harm themselves, that's a different story. You know. So anyway, but I just realized that there are a lot of places that are still in this day and age not always safe for everyone, even adults. And so I really appreciated, I think I paraphrased those lines. But I just really appreciated those lines at the end.
Yeah. I loved the entire book, and I loved how much Elliot shared the grace that maybe he didn't always give himself, but that he hopes others will give themselves in their journey. Because to your point, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we've made some progress on and are very quickly losing ground on, especially for our trans family out there.
Emphasis on family.
Yeah, exactly. It's so upsetting if you sit with it too long. And I think the way out of that is talking to each other, supporting each other.
Listening to each other's stories.
Listening to each other's stories. And we need more stories like this. This is beautiful. And I mean, even though Elliot said, I think in his author's note at the beginning, this isn't unique.
No.
I'm
just one of many.
One of many.
And that's why I said, like, I can see a lot of teens going to this book because it's everywhere, which it should be.
It should be.
But, and parents might just be, yeah, read whatever. But then again, as a parent, I would want to know that there are some details of some sexual encounters and like that may trigger your child or that
they have questions on.
That they have questions on.
Which they should.
Which I would never come to my mom or dad with questions about sex things. I would just, you know, either probably not know or ask a friend and then they didn't know. So we would just continue to be clueless. But yay!
The 90s were a terrible time.
They were a terrible time. So when I think about this, like I said, I wanted to put that in the beginning of like, again, I'd rather people read about it than experience it and have to kind of figure out what happened, you know?
Well, I agree. Because that stuff stays with you. And I mean, there's more on the other side of that event in your life. But it means that there's extra stuff you have to work through.
So do you want to rate it? I feel like...
Oh, but before we rate it, can I say one more thing?
Okay, yeah.
So
you always say one more thing before we rate it.
I know!
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so when like those first like photos of Elliot after like his top surgery and everything had healed, and like he had like a shirt off and he was like by the pool, and like everybody was like, oh my gosh, he's so hot, and like he looks amazing. I'm not attracted to him, but he looks hot.
Hot,
like, he
before, looks attractive. Hot after. This is just an unfair situation of a human who's always going to be hot. Like, I'm just, like I said.
But anyway, I wanted to mention, like, he talks about, like, a good friend that he had before he had come out. And that, like, the first time he saw her, and he was so excited. Like, he has his body. He has his body. And he loves the way he looks. He looks like he believes he should. And, like, he goes, I think it was, like, in a words, it was some event. And his friend, who he thought was an ally and was supportive and was there for him, was like, you look cute.
Mm.
And I was like, that, I mean, no one is asking for perfection. Like, people make mistakes, but also the fact that that human couldn't see that choosing that word would be harmful.
Problematic, yeah.
And problematic. Because, like, even if you say the wrong thing, you're like, oh, shit, I am so sorry. That came out wrong. Let me try again. That's what we're asking for here. Let's try again. But, like, that was so harmful. And I can completely imagine how that could, in that moment, like, just take the wind out of your sails of fully feeling yourself, which every human deserves to feel that way. That one got me.
Okay, I was thinking on this about how, is it rude to rate memoirs? Because it's somebody's story.
Oh,
we've done this before, right. But we gave them a good rating. But I guess I was just wondering, like, maybe we're not rating, like, the story. Maybe we're just rating how the story's told. Because you can't help what your truth is.
This is true.
So.
I mean, mine is 5 rainbows.
Same.
So, I mean.
Yeah, so they're same.
So we're still keeping perfect scores for memoirs.
Yes, pretty much.
I just, oh my goodness, I loved this book so much.
Yes, and it's going in our free little library.
Well, I know, I'm going to keep it forever.
We can buy another copy.
That's true. Yeah. We can do that.
Yeah, that's a thing. All right. So our next read for September, we will have a special guest. It is Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail by Ashley Herring Blake. So this is the second book in this series after Delilah Green Doesn't Care. Mm-hmm. We did that one last year. So if you need to refresh your memory. So you can read these out of order, but it is kind of nice to be familiar with Astrid's story of what happens to her in the first book.
Yeah.
So that this
for
is
context.
Yeah, this is the second book.
And our special guest, you're not going to say who the special guest is.
We'll have to figure it out, yeah.
They'll have to figure it out.
Well, they'll have to listen.
I think it's pretty obvious if they listen to that episode.
They might not have, so just let it be.
Oh, it's a secret.
It's a secret.
It's a secret. You'll have to find out next month.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, until next time.
We're all queer here.
Absolutely.